Ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem. This is Michael Ashley Finn. Since I do not hold the new movie, Civil War, in as such high regards as the rest of the gentlemen, I've been locked away in the palatial mansion of Aaron de Arrive, off in the hills of Austin. I've been told this is for my own protection. I did like the movie. I like the movie a lot. I just don't think it's up to the standards of what's come before, especially since it's from the same creative team that did Winter Soldier, and they made a near-perfect movie. Now, is the problem that they didn't make a near-perfect movie this time? No, the problem is that Winter Soldier was an ensemble cast, yet it was still very much Cap's film. It was Captain America's film. There was no doubt about that. It had the charm, it had the heart, everything suggested it was a Captain America film, and all the other characters were there to support the film. It was awesome. People say this is more like an Avengers film. I think it's more like Iron Man 4, with Captain America as Tony's plucky sidekick that's gone off the reservation and Tony has to go hunt him down. And I suspect the reason why so many people think this is like one of the best Marvel movies ever made is because of the investment of the characters that came before in the other movies. Now, unlike some people, I am a strong proponent of the fact that a movie does not have to stand alone. That it can be part of a trilogy, things don't have to be answered in the movie, things don't have to be fully explained in the movie if it's been explained before. That's not the issue. The issue here, for me, is the heart of the film, the soul of the film, seems to be missing. Much as if this was the best parts version where they crammed all the action pieces and it was really a 10-part miniseries that they crammed for theatrical release down to the bare essentials. It's missing a lot of the awesome heart that was in Winter Soldier. However, it has not only the character payoffs from other films, it also has subjects that are near and dear to people's hearts. Who's right? They're invested in one person's view as well as the characters. And I think because of all this, it elevates the movie dramatically. Whereas I'm over here going, but it doesn't have the same oomph as Avengers, or, you know, it's not as bad as Avengers Age of Ultron, which I also liked. There's pretty much only one Marvel movie that I didn't like, and that one I'm only meh about, and that would be The Incredible Hulk. But that said, yes, I did like Ant-Man. I just don't like it as much as Mark. That said, I think this film may be suffering from what is seeming to become what I call the Marvel Studios syndrome, which is kind of like second movie syndrome. The Avengers, Joss Whedon's first one. Absolutely great, top-notch, one of the best films out there for the Marvel Universe. Second movie, Age of Ultron, it's got problems. I feel the same way here. Same creative team behind the Russos and everything, behind Winter Soldier. Tied for the top movie in the Marvel Universe for me with Avengers. This movie has a lot of great stuff in it. It just seems to be jumping from thing to thing without the tissue really in there that well. Again, this is me. This is my opinion, and not that of the rest of the gentlemen nerds. Everything that's about to follow, I completely agree with. Well, obviously not everything, because they absolutely love the film. But all the points, all the character points, all the humor, the individual scenes, the airport scene was brilliant. The final fight scene was great. But back to the original point of this not really feeling like Cap's movie, everybody in this film has conflict. They have internal conflict. They have a little bit of things going on here and there, facial expressions. From the get-go, Steve Rogers is, nope, not going to do it. And basically, Tony's been calling him an arrogant for movies, several movies. This is the first time I've ever felt like he was right. There was no attempt to go, look, this is wrong. Here's why. Why don't we not fight about this? It was, nope, sorry, punch. You're wrong, punch. To paraphrase the Batman versus Superman debate, that's not my Captain America. Anyways, oh, wait. They're sending somebody to check on me. I better sign off here. So here there are the gents in the Lobot Lounge, and they're going to be a lot more upbeat about it than I was. Remember, I did like the film. Red Skull is only mostly dead.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Gentleman Nerds. The Marvel Universe is in turmoil, and tonight we are going to talk about the central conflict in Captain America: Civil War, one of required supervision. Specifically, the Sokovia Accords. It's a piece of legislation that, if enacted, would make all vigilantes and superheroes required to register with the government. It also essentially makes them employees of the government, and that doesn't sit right with one Captain Steve Rogers. Tony Stark, Iron Man, is on the opposite side of this conundrum, and the two, through their strained relationship, eventually come to blows with individual teams of superheroes duking it out in Captain America Civil War, a fantastic movie, the latest entry in the Marvel Universe cinematic world. And here we are in the Lobot Lounge. Boy, what a movie. We've all seen it, and we're bursting at the seams. So ladies and gentlemen, grab a drink, join us in the Lobot Lounge. We're about to start talking about Captain America Civil War. And now let me introduce to you the Gentleman Nerds, Mr. Mark Finn.
When Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Mr. Aaron DeOrive.
Dude shows up dressed as a cat and you don't want to know more?
And I'm Joseph Otinos. Little guy got giant. Little guy got giant. Thank you so much for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. If you haven't seen Captain America Civil War, we urge you to turn the podcast off. Come back after and listen to us. But we are going to do some spoilery things here because we're going to talk about all things Civil War. Boy, what a movie, guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
Loved it.
Yep. Again, another triumph for, and actually, in many ways, I see it as a redemption of Marvel movies, since I was disappointed by Avengers: Age of Ultron.
Yes.
And in many ways, this movie, you know, it's almost funny. The comparisons to Batman versus Superman in this are inevitable, and I think they did something. They showed DC how to do something. They put Iron Man in a position in Age of Ultron to make him rather unsympathetic, in my opinion. You know, and people are like, typical Tony, arrogant prick, he does whatever he wants, look at him just flaunting the law, he's above the law, he's a rogue, he does what he wants. And then they completely reversed his role in Civil War to show that he actually has been affected by his actions. The consequences of his actions have come home, and they lay heavy on his conscience. And so his decision is so much motivated by what happened in Age of Ultron that I actually forgive Age of Ultron and welcome it as part of the story.
I just think as a result of everything that he's seen and done in the cinematic experience, even from, you know, the PTSD he experienced after going into space and seeing aliens and fighting the Battle of New York and going through the retribution of Iron Man 3, becoming his own Iron Man and no longer having the shrapnel about to dive into his heart.
Yeah.
And then you factor that in with his personal life. He has a breakup with Pepper Potts in Civil War that they reference, and it obviously affects him deeply. He's a lonely man now. I think he's lonely,
right.
And I think he doubts himself. And this is the opportunity that I think he's desperately trying to keep this group together.
But isn't the arc amazing?
Oh, it's wonderful.
His arc, it's just,
yeah,
wow.
That's
they
how you do it.
Pulled
yeah.
it off. They
yeah.
pulled it off.
They also the other thing that they added to this, which was really nice, is something that they seeded in the Iron Man movies, and that is the strained relationship with his father. It's barely there in the first movie. It really shows up in the second movie. And it's somewhat absent in the third movie, but not really. But it really comes to the fore in the first Avengers movie. Captain America shows up, and right away, Tony's hackles are up because this is the guy that his dad shoved down his throat for all of his life.
Right. Yeah. Wouldn't shut up.
This is the older brother that Tony never had. And it is very much a case of sibling rivalry, and I love and it's perfect in that there's a point when siblings are far enough apart in age that the older one really doesn't have any idea what's going on with the younger one, and that is Steve, man. He's clueless. He has no idea that he is a living reminder of everything unsaid between Tony and his father. You know? Yeah. And so not only does this add resonance to the second Avengers movie, right? But it also suddenly becomes very much a redeemer for Iron Man 2, one of the weaker movies in the Marvel chain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So very, very nicely put together by taking all the stray Legos that were laying around and kind of building something that you didn't expect out of those Legos.
And by the way, same thing for Captain America. We see him start as this incredibly idealistic character that has these values that are Superman-like in their purity. And we see him over the course of his movies and the movies that he is in, especially with Winter Soldier, where he's really starting to question now the order of the world and law. What does law mean? What does the rule of law mean? And now culminating in he is outside the law. He has decided to, in essence, flip positions with Tony, and now he's the guy that's above the law. His friends are above the law.
But the reasons he does it is still pure Captain America.
Absolutely.
The reasons he does it, he doesn't do it because he's vain and he disagrees with it because for whatever personal reason that Tony would have done, Captain America does it for all the right reasons. He says, this is wrong, and he says, I'm going to stand against it, and no matter what, whatever happens, this is wrong, and I know this is wrong.
Yeah, he's coming from a place of moral absolute, which is nice.
Yeah, he hasn't changed at all in that.
But it shows that level of I guess, zealotry doesn't work, because look what he's done. He's essentially taken, because he's a friend of his, he's taken a known terrorist responsible for the deaths of, as far as we know, dozens and dozens of people, including Tony's parents.
Not his fault.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The Captain America that I know would say, let's bring him in. Let's have the justice system judge this man. And people are saying, well, there was a kill order on him. No. They arrested Bucky before. We saw them. They put him in the little cage. Captain America could have ensured that nobody was just going to cap Bucky the minute he walked in to a police precinct. So instead of letting the law take its course and defending his friend and testifying for him or doing whatever he needed to do, he decides to take him out of the U.S., take him to a foreign country, and shield him there. That is not Captain America. I'm sorry, but that is not Captain
America.
Well,
there is another player, and there's another reason for this.
I was going to say, go ahead.
All of that is true what you said, but the factor, the mitigating factor in all of that is Wakanda has its own sense of justice, and that is the Black Panther. And so as soon as the Black Panther shows up and makes it very clear that he's an eye for an eye kind of spirit of vengeance.
Literally going for his eye.
Exactly. He makes it very clear that, I don't think your laws have worked so far. However, if I take him out, I can absolutely avenge my father's death and restore the honor of my people.
And
that's when things get extreme.
But I don't think Cap's not going to punish the Winter Soldier for crimes he committed under the influence of some brainwashing. He's certainly not going to punish the Winter Soldier for crimes that he knows deep down in his heart he didn't do. And what's most important to Cap, very important in the movie too, Peggy Carter, his long-lost love from years ago, passes away in the movie, dies in her sleep, and has a very emotional funeral. That's one link to his past gone. The only other link to his past is Bucky Barnes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no.
And he's going to do everything he can to save him because he knows in his heart of hearts Bucky is a good person.
Right, no. Make no mistake. Right. I'm not saying that Cap is wrong for trying to defend Bucky.
Right.
I'm saying that the ideals that he was holding himself to and others to, it's super simple. Flip their positions, right? Let's for a moment flip their positions. Iron Man has a friend who he knows has been brainwashed, and he knows that he didn't do it. Captain America has been sent to get this man, bring him into custody, let the law take its course. And Iron Man, instead of sitting down and explaining it to Captain, says no, he's the usual arrogant prick self, and he keeps blasting him, and he keeps fighting. Cap's like, stop, you don't do this, Iron Man. No, screw you, blast, blast, out, repulsor, takes him to another country, shields him there, breaks people out of the super prison, because, they're good guys too. I mean, come on. If you flip their position, suddenly you're like, yeah, you know what? That would be a real dick move by Tony Stark. and it'd be a typical arrogant move. But because Captain America did it, mm-hmm. for all the reasons that Joseph stated, and I agree with them, yeah. Bucky is the last connection he has to the life that has forever gone to him, gone from him. So I get that he would be protective. I absolutely understand that he would be protective. But instead of stopping and saying, listen, hear me out, Tony, and explaining what's going on. Mind you, this is the guy that stopped the fight between Thor and Iron Man because they were both being assholes and were fighting and were not talking to each right. other. You know, that's the same guy. Now he has basically put himself in the same position. I'm going to punch you, Tony, instead of explaining what's going on.
Well, Tony, I think Tony threw the first punch.
Well, but it doesn't matter. Captain America's better than that.
Well, now, and in response, I was saving this to the end, but you have raised my hackles, Mr. Dearity Bay. So listen to this.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what the press says. Doesn't matter what the politicians or the mob say. Doesn't matter if the whole country decides that something wrong is something right. This nation was founded on one principle above all else, the requirement that we stand up for what we believe, no matter the odds or the consequences. When the mob and the press and the whole world tell you to move, your job is to plant yourself like a tree beside the river of truth and tell the whole world, no, you move.
Wow.
That's Captain America.
Yeah, and you know what? That could have just easily have been said by Victor Von Doom. Seriously.
River of Truth.
Word
come
for
on.
Word.
America.
Word for word. No. That could have been said by Victor Von Doom. No. And that's, no. No, it's an important point.
Captain America, his colors don't fade, baby.
Because except for your perspective, that's the difference between what makes you a villain and what makes you a hero.
Let me suggest something here. I think you guys are talking about the same coin, but we're looking at it from different sides. I want to suggest the possibility that Cap has been more of a constant, and it's the political situation that has moved.
Yeah.
And
the world around him.
And especially in the Winter Soldier, we see the shift when the rot comes from within the government as Hydra has infiltrated.
He's been working for Hydra.
Right. And so.
And he's been working for Hydra.
Yeah. And so
but that's why I say I don't disagree. I don't disagree that Cap, in his mind, is doing what he's doing because he thinks it's for the best. It's the right thing to do. I don't doubt that at all. I'm saying this, depending on where you're standing, those could be the actions of a hero, or they could be the actions of a villain.
Oh, I see. Now, your moral compass isn't necessarily someone else's moral compass.
So
correct.
Where does Tony benefit in signing the Sokovia documents? Where does he benefit?
Well,
what do you think his motivation is?
I think Tony's motivation stems from a sense of I think he's growing up, and I think part of the Iron Man 3 is Tony deciding to grow up. And so from Iron Man 3 forward, basically the end of basically all of Phase 2 of the Marvel Universe, we see a very different Tony Stark. And the fact that he spent $66 million at the beginning of this movie to go get the weird science version of Robert Downey Jr. to play him in the flashback neural net, you know, therapy session is him basically trying to make, make peace with those demons, make peace with his past, make peace with his father. And his, I think that's why he walks away from the company. And so I think that there's a lot of, I think the arc, Tony's arc is one of maturity, and he basically becomes, he's never going to be his dad. Let's face it. As soon as he starts hitting on Peter Parker's aunt, you know, we know he's still Tony Stark.
Although Marissa Tomei is Aunt May, on that
who
too.
Who could blame him, right?
Yeah, really.
But I think that the factor here is the idea that he feels responsible. He shoved his way onto the Avengers team. Mm-hmm, he took a leadership role, and despite the fact, you know, of course, my fundamental problem with it is this notion that Scarlet Witch is held accountable for that, because I think had she let the bomb go off in the crowd, just as many people would have died. So I think that there's a I feel like we're not allowing for the fog of war here. Be that as it may, Tony's attempt to – he's already tried to lay all of his personal demons to rest, and if he can lay this guilt aside – he can go on and maybe get Pepper back and, you know, turn into an adult. I think this is Tony's journey into adulthood.
Aaron mentioned something earlier about Batman and Superman, and I just wanted to jump in real quick because you mentioned about the fog of war. And it's the same, at the beginnings at least, the same kind of motivation where Bruce Wayne witnesses the destruction of Metropolis during the battle between Zod and Kal-El. And now here we've got the Avengers doing what they do and all the collateral damage that has been done every time they battle something or someone.
Right.
Now, mind you, they save so many more people, but it's the individuals.
Right.
Very much like the Superman story, Grounded, where he's confronted with the idea that, hey, Superman, this is a picture of my husband, and he had a terminal brain illness, and you could have saved him with your heat vision. You could have pinpointed the cancer, and you could have killed it, but you didn't, and he died. I hate you. And Superman's like, well, I can't save everyone, right. You know? It makes him feel bad. Tony was, you know, by the elevator, and he's confronted with a woman who shared the story of her son and gave him a picture of her,
right.
of the son. And you know, it's when you put a face to the collateral damage, when you put a story to the collateral damage, and you know Tony obsessed over it. He found everything he could about this kid. And
right, it, the more he looked him up, yeah.
Yeah, the more he found out, the worse it got.
Yeah.
To where he was beaten, and he said, no, we have to do something. And in the beginning, it's a gesture. I honestly think that for Tony, in the beginning, he's like, you know what? We need this. We need this supervision, required supervision, but it's a gesture. And he even said it. Later, we can go and change the writing. We can do what we want.
Right, right.
You know, when Thanos comes to Earth, which you know he's coming, folks, in the Infinity War. When Thanos comes to Earth, whatever. Sokovia Agreement? Yeah, whatever. Who cares?
Well, but at that point, yeah. I think Tony's point is, at that point, the countries are going to be more than happy to let the Avengers do what they need to do.
Exactly.
So that's the thing. But again, let's that's an excellent comparison, Joseph, and let's continue with that. Let's say that in Batman versus Superman, they had all those scenes where people are saying, you know, we know he can do these things. Should he do these things? And they called Superman in and they said, Superman, you have to work with us, with the countries of the world. Mm. We have to have some supervision over what you were doing. And he said, nope, not going to happen. Would people go, yeah, that's Superman. He's doing it for the right reason. No, they'd go, what? Is he turning into Zod? What's happening? Why is he not working with the governments of the world?
I'll tell you where part of the problem is with this. And you guys know how I feel about Batman versus Superman, that I was not a fan. And so it's weird that I'm going to say this out loud because I frankly don't like kicking people when they're down. But I don't mean this in a bad way. I'm saying that it's not fair to compare the movies.
No, it's not.
Per se,
I was simply,
because you have 13 Marvel films. Actually, let's be fair. You don't have 13 Marvel films. You have 8 Marvel films. You have 3 Iron Mans, 2 Avengers, and 3 Captain Americas. Okay, Ant-Man is certainly in there, but not germane to this larger point being made. The point being made is in the 3 Iron Mans, the 3 Caps, and the 2 Avenger movies. Okay, so they had 8 films to develop this storyline. And we all know that there was a lot of footage in the first Avengers movie and out loud points being made in the second movie that they were going to try and save people and do what they could. And it's obvious in this film that even though they did, there was a lot of damage and people still died and they couldn't save everybody. Right. So that's why this film works the way it works. It works because we have a total of, let's charitably call it 15 hours of movie story invested in both how we feel about Cap, how we feel about Tony, their relationship together, and how they have affected the larger world at hand. In Batman versus Superman, we have 1.5 movies to ponder all that.
Right.
No, no, no.
Not even that, yeah.
Make no mistake, I'm saying Marvel did it right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm saying Marvel is showing DC, this is how you do it right. But I'm saying many of the themes are the same.
In fact, let's continue with that, because here's another comparison. Motivation. Lex Luthor in Batman vs. Superman, for some reason, that we could only figure, we were giving him generous, you know, maybe he's being controlled by Darkseid or whatever. That was a guess. But there's no justification for what he does. He doesn't just go, Superman killed my parents, I hate him. No, he wants to be God. He wants to control God. He wants to prove that God, that ultimate power can't be good. Or whatever the hell he was ranting about with his crazy hair. You know, he didn't have motivation. Now, compare that to the most successful, sorry Loki, the most successful villain in the history of the cinematic Marvel Universe, Helmut Zemo.
Yeah, he was an anti-villain, for crying out loud, you know?
Who single-handedly brought the Avengers down. Yep. He did. By very carefully plotting this amazing revenge plot. A Sokovian spy, Helmut Zemo. Different than he is in the comic, although the motivation is somewhat similar because it's revenge. There's a lot of revenge about it.
I thought Zemo was fantastic.
Zemo was, and he... the most effective villain, because he knew he wasn't powerful enough to fight the Avengers. There's no way. And even in the nice twist, when he would think he's going to release all these super soldiers to make his Masters of Evil, to make this group, this army who could fight the Avengers, no. He doesn't want that. He kills them all.
It was a beautiful psych out for comic fans, right? Because we thought this was going a certain direction, and it didn't. But and you know, you're initially like, well, what's the game here? And then you realize as soon as that footage started playing for the third time, and I realized that we were going to swing around, that's when it hit me, and it just. Like before even anybody else in the movie gets it, there's a beat where everybody in the audience goes, oh no, I know what this is.
It was an absolutely beautiful moment. I mean, they did such a good job.
I felt like Chekhov in Star Trek too. Botany Bay. We
got
to get out of here.
And by the way, that look is brilliantly shown on Chris Evans's face when Chris Evans is going, holy shit, oh my God, what am I going to do?
Here's the one thing that I will concede to you that Cap is out of character for me, is the fact that he knew that the Winter Soldier had killed Tony's parents.
Yep.
He knew, and he hid it.
Yep.
Then they go, huh. Another little point here that I want to bring up real quick before we leave Zemo behind. He's not done, folks. Yes, I think that he was indeed about to shoot himself, and Black Panther effortlessly stopped him with his vibranium suit. But I think that Zemo in that little box being picked on by Martin Friedman at the end of the film, and he's got that sly smile on his face, he's not done by a sight. Because, hey, folks, Red Skull lives.
Wouldn't it be great if Zemo kickstarted Hydra again?
Yeah, right.
And reclaimed his Baron title. Yeah, because, you know, if Zemo finds out that the Red Skull is not dead, this could be an epic thing. Yeah. Anyways.
Well, and by the way, talk about the perfect return for Red Skull. You have Red Skull come back, and he starts recruiting all of these disgruntled villains, starts, you know, breaks into the vault or whatever they call that big prison, and starts, you know, pulling everybody out like Captain America did with all his friends.
By the way, does he have a healing factor? Does Cap heal quicker? When he showed up there at the end, when, you know, the walk up to the prison dramatically, he looked pristine. Tony's all beat up. He's black eye and his arm. And that.
I think he does heal.
Does that super soldier serum give him a healing factor?
A little bit. So. It's not regeneration.
It's not Wolverine.
But he didn't have a bruise on his perfect face.
He recuperates faster. How about that? It's a recuperation factor, not a healing factor.
Oh, that'll work.
Yeah.
There's no moment. In the movie that I thought, you know, that didn't need to be in there.
No, that's the beautiful thing. At 2.5 hours, it does not watch like a 2.5 hour long movie.
No, not at all. Some people complain about the Wanda Vision scenes and kind of wondered, well, why were they in there for a Captain America, you know, movie? Really, the story was about Captain America and Iron Man. But I appreciated that. I love that they put those scenes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, we both know where this is going, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course.
I think this is what people have really still not kind of picked up on after 13 Marvel movies is they're seeding future stories.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
It's a constant seeding of future stories. These things are there's a tapestry being woven here. We have to talk about Spider-Man. We just got it. Oh my God!
And that's a biggie. Spidey deserves a nice section of our conversation. So if you don't mind, what I'd like to do, I'd like to go around the table and I'm going to list a character that appeared in Civil War. And you guys tell me your favorite moments of that character in this movie, because everyone's shown.
Oh,
everyone
yeah.
had moments to shine.
Absolutely.
So we'll go ahead and start with War Machine.
I absolutely adore Don Cheadle. Ever since he got picked up into the franchise with the second movie, we can't have enough Rhodey in the film. I think Cheadle and Downey Jr. play off of each other very well. And actually, my favorite part of... I know the Stank thing is very funny, but I love his part in the conversation that's taking place at the beginning when they're debating the subject. He's career military, man. He's he's a pilot with decorated medals and missions to his roster, and I like the fact that he comes in as that level-headed voice, and I feel like this is. Part of the Tony Rhodey dynamic is Tony's maturity. You know, they're more eye to eye now than they ever were, which I love.
Aaron,
mine is just it's the line. It's little guy's huge now.
During the classic airport battle, another classic Rhodey moment for me was when Ant-Man gave Cap the little tiny truck. And said, "Throw this at him, and then throw this at that thing. Go!" And Cap does it, and of course, Ant-Man's technology makes it grow gigantic into its because it's an actual real truck that he shrunk down, and it's a gas truck. And he goes, and Rhodey's response is like, "Oh, give me a break!" Wham! And it just blows up all over him. And Ant-Man's field, and he's like, "Oh, I thought that was a water truck."
That was funny. God, so many moments.
Moving on down the roster, Black Widow.
Okay, another example of a character that I didn't really have an affinity for, and an actress that I didn't really care for. I mean, I think Scarlett Johansson is beautiful, but I've never really connected with her in any of her movies. I think she has made that character her own. She's given that character a wonderfully snarky sense of humor, and I'm so Team Black Widow. I think she's great. Actually, my favorite bit is in that little talk again where he says, "Paranoid much?" And she goes, "No, why? Did somebody say something?" It's a great line. Straight delivery, you know. The whole thing is a joke. And bonus moment, the thing with her and Clint, you know. Are we still friends? Depends on how hard it hit me.
that is my favorite. That's both my favorite Black Widow moment and Hawkeye moment. Are we still friends? It depends on how hard you hit me.
Yeah.
There was a very interesting moment that transpired between Winter Soldier and Black Widow, where as he's escaping and he is attacking her and she's fighting back, she pauses and says in a very strange intonation to him, "Don't you even know me?" Which raises all kinds of questions to me. What was that about? Because we know that he tried to kill her. She showed the scar in Captain America Winter Soldier.
Yeah, right.
Maybe there's something more.
Yeah.
It would be really cool if this movie that they're teasing is – I wouldn't mind if it's a fill-in-the-blanks thing because, she's got so much history. It would be fun to watch some of that connective tissue explored.
But she didn't say it. I mean, she didn't deliver it as like, "Hey, well, don't you even know me? Come on, don't fight me." No, she just – it was very earnest, and it was a eye-to-eye moment, and she looked at him with these big doe eyes of hers, and she says, "Don't you even know me?"
Yeah.
I mean, she said it like that, and so it was like, what's that about?
Well, that even made – I think somebody on social media even was then trying to say, Did they have a relationship? Did something happen with them in the past?
Maybe they partnered at one
point.
Who
knows? Yeah, yeah. I mean, she clearly knew about the Winter Soldier and who he was. And
she told Cap. Black Panther, one of our new, the newest hero, really. We haven't seen him on the Marvel screen yet. And
I loved every second of that guy. Jesus Christ.
Big T'Challa fan from way back. I think that what they did with him was perfect. We got the vibranium explanation in Captain America 1. They brought in the notion of vibranium in Wakanda again in Winter Soldier, and vibranium in Wakanda took center stage here. And I think what works best of all is the way that they introduced him, and I liked his turn when he decided, you know, killing's not going to solve this.
Right.
So it was just a beautiful interpretation of the character from start to finish, top to bottom. You know, he's now ready for a movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
What an intro. What an intro for that character.
Perfectly designed. They gave him the best possible motivation for hanging out with these guys to follow this plot line through. They gave him a different fighting style and did not scrimp on anything regarding his technology, the claws, the running around on the walls and stuff. So all of that was just, you know, pitch perfect in every way.
Yeah. My favorite was when he realizes when he's talking to Zemo and he's saying, you know, I will no longer let vengeance control me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's vengeance has destroyed you. It's destroyed the Avengers. You know, it's a beautiful moment. It's a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And he's—I couldn't get enough either. I mean, he's ready for a standalone film. I'm wondering, and I think I read this that Claw is a Black Panther villain. Is that right?
Claw was originally an Iron Man villain.
Yeah,
okay,
originally.
Okay. But is he? I thought I read somewhere where he was going to appear in Black Panther standalone.
That would not surprise me. I mean, they've already introduced him.
Right. They've taken the hand away, so he's going to get some sonic weapon or something.
Yes. I believe Claw's past does have something to do with vibranium.
He was stealing the vibranium in Ultron. That's where Ultron got the vibranium from.
Yeah.
Because Claw had stolen, and T'Challa made a reference to the terrorist who stole the vibranium, I think, in this movie. He says something.
It wouldn't surprise me if we saw Claw. And I like Andy Serkis. I like when Andy Serkis plays, you know, himself. Like when you can see his face. So Andy Serkis is Claw fighting T'Challa? That would be fantastic.
Yep. Sign me up.
The Vision.
Well, Paul Bettany's awesome. And I feel like we finally got a Vision moment. Which was lovely. My favorite part of the Vision was the fight with Clint to liberate Scarlet Witch, because we got to see the Vision in action in a way that we didn't really get to see in Ultron. So it's very clear now, and they further defined his costume a little bit more. I really felt like I was reading an Avengers comic. From the late 70s, early 80s.
God, when she turned on his density and made him fall through the floor, those are his powers.
Yeah, those are his powers. Awesome. Yep. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Perfectly done. Yeah.
Wonderful. I loved when he finally, my favorite moment was when he's so self-reflective and he's thinking, I'm feeling something. You know, it's like, why did you mess up? What happened?
Yeah.
And he said, I was distracted, you know, and he's realizing what's happening to him. He's falling in love.
Yep.
With Scarlet Witch, beautiful. Again, it's just so well done, well done.
Where they're heading, and Mark alluded to this earlier, for those of you that don't know, in the comic continuity, the Scarlet Witch and the Vision get married.
Yep.
So there's a romance budding there between the synthoid and a creepy goth girl. But I do like when Vision is talking with Scarlet Witch. Those scenes, I think, are really nice.
Yeah.
And my
good
favorite moments,
aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they really. And he's wearing his cool sweater, and he looks really casual. But my favorite moment, is when he reflectively touches the Infinity Stone embedded into his head. He says, "I don't know what this is," and it opens up for me. I was like, you know, because. That I have a bad feeling that thing's going to be popped out of his head.
Oh, that's that's literally, you know? Chekhov's gun. I mean, without a doubt. Yeah.
It's gonna tear the team apart. It's gonna be horrible, especially for Scarlet Witch. But I don't think Vision can function without that thing. And I think that that's a fifth stone in somebody's glove. So it's going to be taken, I'm afraid.
Yep. Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Let's save the kid from Queens for last. I'm going to jump to the Cap side. Winter Soldier, liked him a lot in this one. Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
He's the only guy that didn't get more of an arc. But my favorite moment with him that I thought was really touching was just before they jumped out of the plane to go deal with stuff, and they shared that moment about when they were on Rockaway Beach. And the girl that he got, and he says, you know, that was 100 years ago. He says, I hate to break it to you, we're 100 years old. You know,
yeah.
Lovely, lovely moment. And just one of the things that one of my favorite things about Marvel Comics is, as much as the fights are great and Jack Kirby's awesome and the dynamic and the interesting characters and all that, they even in the '60s had this point where they would show these characters in between their adventures, these quiet moments, you know, where Captain America and Ben Grimm are drinking coffee and talking about their service experience, or Nick Fury and the Beast are playing poker with Wonder Girl, with Miss Marvel and Wonder Man, you know, and I love those moments because those are the things that allow us to connect with these characters, that these are people with problems, and the movies have done a great job of that, and I think Winter Soldier has some of my favorite of those moments in it. I'm sorry to take so long. Go ahead.
No. That's great. I of course I like the humor. I love when he asks Falcon to maybe could move a seat. And then later when they're lying there after Spider-Man said, you could have done that sooner. And he says, I hate you.
Yes.
Those two had some, it was a great, it was just some great banter between those two.
I was going to feed off that myself. Those are my favorite moments when the Winter Soldier showed more humanity and smiled.
Yeah.
When they were in the back of the VW, he and Sam and Cap kisses Sharon for the first time, and then he looks over, and both of them are sitting there looking at him, smiling at him. Like, yeah, buddy. I mean, that was nice. It was nice. I want to see, and we're gonna segue into Sam because I want to see more of Bucky and Sam. They had a really good, rapport between them. They were very, very good together, and it was almost like, you know, I'm Cap's best friend. No, I'm Cap's best friend. You know, there was a little bit of that going on.
There was a bit of a rivalry.
And let's talk about Falcon now because wow, he's amazing. I mean, just what they do with him now, the way he fights, the way he attacks. And he's got Redbird! Redbird!
Yeah. And then using the wings as shields and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, his powers, of all of them, his powers are beautifully realized on screen. I loved Falcon from the moment he stepped into the cinematic universe, and I want more. I want more. I want more of Falcon. He's just so awesome. And making Red Wing a drone. Of course, Red Wing's a drone.
Right.
I have to tell you that I am a kid in a candy store. Okay, because so many of as much as I like the big guys, and Spider-Man is certainly one of my all-time favorite superheroes of all, I really love the second tier Marvel. As Captain America and the Falcon was a classic team up that lasted for several years in the comics, and that was when I started reading Captain America. Okay, and so the Falcon has always been a very important character to me that they have underused in the comics for years, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is making up for that in spades. Gotta tell you, what's up, Tic Tac? Best line of the movie, man.
Call
Tic Tac.
Yeah,
and not only that, but hey, you know, that was a good audition, but that is never going to happen again. So good.
Falcon is genius. Oh my gosh, I cannot get more of Falcon. In fact, I'm hoping in the Black Panther movie, I'm hoping Falcon or Cap make an appearance. I mean, Cap, it would make sense because Bucky's there in Wakanda. So I can only hope that the Black Panther movie is going to give us more Cap and Falcon.
I enjoyed Falcon the moment with Sam. I liked all his stuff, but there was a moment where when Rhodey gets critically hurt by that horrible shotgun awry by the Vision, and because Sam gets out of the way and it hits Rhodey and he goes down, And Falcon stops what he's doing and immediately goes after him. Yeah. He's just diving out of the sky to try to catch him, just like Iron Man is.
Yeah.
I mean, he lands, he shows concern. It's, you know, it's game over. I mean, wait, time out, time out. Someone got hurt. Somebody got hurt. You know, and this ain't right. This ain't right.
They have that connection in that, you know, they are both pilots. Yeah. And so that military experience is coming to the fore again, you know. It was really a great change that they did to make him a veteran with this experimental technology and having a little PTSD. That was a wonderful bridge for him and Steve to get together on. Yep. But I have to say, I think Falcon is another one of these characters that we got zip diddly on, and he just shows up and he's fully realized from the second we get to him.
Oh yeah.
And I don't think they get credit for that because everybody was just so excited that the Winter Soldier didn't suck. but truly, Falcon is one of the great characters, and I don't know if we're going to see him in the Black Panther movie, but I would really like to see Cap and Falcon in supporting roles in the Black Widow movie. That's what I think.
And probably if they do a Black Widow movie, undoubtedly those two will show up.
Yeah.
Because they become a bit of a trio.
They have, and their dynamic is wonderful. But Falcon is just perfect. He's one of my favorite characters. I absolutely adored all the wing tech. That was comic porn for me. I just loved
it. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I mean, the way his power works, the flying, the zooming, the turning into shields, and oh my gosh, I'm like, really? That's the power I want. Yeah, I want
great,
that thing.
Great. My favorite Falcon line too. When they take his wings away, he said, "I better look out the window and see one of you guys flying around."
Yeah,
I thought that was for
God. Cool. That's hilarious.
So Tic Tac, let's talk about the Ant Man. I think he did a really. He played an important role in that. He brought a lot of humor to this.
Oh God, yeah.
He was nailing, and you know who doesn't like Paul Rudd? I mean, come on.
Paul Rudd's great.
He's a delight.
Paul Rudd's great. It's so funny. I didn't care for the Ant-Man movie that much. I loved Ant-Man in this.
Yeah,
I loved Ant-Man in this. So he was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, my favorite line is this is your conscience. We don't talk much these days. who's saying that? This is your conscience. And he's unplugging all the stuff.
You're gonna have to take this into the shop.
Another one of my favorite, absolute favorite. Second tier characters is Ant-Man, and specifically Scott Lang Ant-Man, because that was a character I was able to follow from his first appearance in Marvel Premiere Magazine when it first came out, and so I've been a Scott Lang fan from the second he showed up in the comics. So again, my cup runneth over.
Did either of you two guys know he was going to grow in this movie?
Yes,
yeah,
you did. I did not.
Unfortunately, I was spoiled by Toy Fair.
Oh, I did because not. And it was brilliant.
Lego released a set called Airport Battle, and it was on display at Toy Fair. And you're looking at the Airport Battle set on display at Toy Fair going, yes, yes, yet, what the hell? Because they have a giant version of Ant-Man
God,
in there.
I'm so sorry, because that was such a wonderful surprise.
Well, I knew it, but the good news is I'd forgotten it. And so when he does it, I got real excited. In fact, when he said once in a lab, my thought is, oh God, he's going to go microscopic. He's going to go subatomic again.
That's what I thought.
Right. And so when he went the other way, I thought that was just awesome. Actually, the best. Yeah, his introduction to the group is my favorite because it tells you everything you need to know about Ant-Man. And I will officially start hitting people in the throat who start dissing Paul Rudd and Ant-Man. He's earned his spot. And if anybody's he was just dumb, I'll karate chop to the throat.
Yeah. No, he's fantastic. You know,
what they did, which was really smart, is the two teams mirror each other in terms of content. Cap and Iron Man are both leaders. Rhodey and Falcon are both military pilots.
Wingmen,
literally. Vision and Scarlet Witch, massive powers, but unpredictable and untrained. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man and Ant-Man, wild cards with senses of humor. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Black Panther and Hawkeye, technically proficient masters of the, you know, like hand-to-hand combatants.
Yeah.
And so they did a really good job of matching everybody up. Or you could, you know, if you want to go Bucky and...
I would have gone Bucky and T'Challa and Black Widow and Hawkeye.
Right, that works out. Those two characters, all four of them are kind of the same type of character. But they all have that that kind of intensity, you know. And, of course, Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch have the shield. Or not Scarlet Witch, but Black Widow have the shield connection as well. So it was a really cool mirroring that they did. And but the characters are so diverse, it doesn't seem like it. But as I was watching the thing play out, I was like, oh, this is perfect. You know, everybody's got a counterpart.
And Hawkeye, let's jump to him. Clint Barton, he shows back up after retirement. And even Iron Man said, well, that didn't take long. You know, you're back again. That was pretty quick. I think Clint and my favorite moment. I'm going to go ahead and jump on this one is when they're in the prison and Tony walks in and he says, "The futurist, ladies and gentlemen, the futurist. He's going to save us all."
Yeah,
and that's exactly what Tony is.
Yep,
he's going to save us with his technology. You know, he is the futurist, and Clint's going to call BS when he sees it.
Yep.
You know,
I'm a big another one of my second tier guys that I adore. You know, a character that they've done great things with in the comics. If you haven't read Matt Fraction's Hawkeye series, it is marvelous and perfect and wonderful. And I would love to see those turned into a movie with Jeremy Renner in the role. But they've actually given him a better backstory in the movies. So it was just nice to see him in action. And anytime he shows up, he plays that utility player role. I really liked the way that he was used in the battle. I thought it was good to give him that kind of technical acumen. And I thought it was also really fun to have he and Scarlet Witch, or I'm sorry, Black Widow square off like that, you know.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was really cool.
I think it was Scarlet Witch who came up and took out Black Widow for the time being, and turned to him and said, "You were pulling your punches."
That's right.
and that's a good segue to jump to Wanda, the Scarlet Witch. Untrained, still unsure of her powers. When she became sure of them, boy, she did a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And she was taking people out left and right on that battlefield. She was holding her own just fine.
Yeah.
But I also think that it was interesting because she's still very young in this version. And she was being held against her will, almost like a prisoner. And that was a very crucial moment for Cap. He was going to sign. He was very close to signing the document in front of Tony using the fancy pen. Boy, Tony had it really well set up. You know who used this pen?
Right.
Come on, American hero, use this pen.
Yeah.
And I think he was like, okay, you know what? And then when he found out that, where's Wanda? Oh, she's being, what? You know?
Yeah.
Oh, forget it. Uh-uh. No, you've gone too far. Right. It's not as far as Tony went in the comic book Civil War, where he was sending people to interdimensional prison, sending heroes to interdimensional
right,
prison,
right.
and allowing villains to take part in this Civil War. I mean, I think the Tony in the comic book was a little more extreme.
Definitely.
And harder to get behind, unlike this Tony. But Scarlet Witch was very important to Cap in that it kind of triggered it.
If you notice, even in the movie, even the fact that she was being held, Tony explains why. She is a non-American in the United States. She has no papers. There's no immigration. There's no passport.
Nazi Germany.
You know, like what's going to happen to her?
Right.
Like, you know, Tony thought, you know what the safest place for her is? In the freaking mansion.
Just like Anne Frank in the attic, right?
No, I'm saying that he's right.
Yeah.
That is the safest place for her.
I
love that. Even when Captain America was offended because her liberty had been taken from
her.
Tony is explaining, it's not that simple, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that simple, Steve. It's not black and white.
And Cap's on the ground. He saw her saving lives. He also saw that she saved his life. And that is something that matters to Cap. So I think I liked that Wanda had more of an arc in this. That was really good. I really enjoyed the scenes with Vision. I thought that was great. It's definitely a wonderful setup for what comes later. And I was particularly impressed with how much characterization. Of course, the actress whose name escapes me right now, Elizabeth Olsen, is a really good actress, and I think she got every erg fraction of material emotional juice out of the script that she could. Yeah. And so I think that was a really a good example of how you put even in a small role, mm-hmm. the right person can be brilliant if the material is there. So
yeah.
And now, is he strong? Listen, bud. He's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there. Here comes the Spider-Man. Here he is, folks. Realized in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I have homework.
Yeah.
I'm so happy. I never had a problem with Tobey Maguire doing Spidey. I thought that was certainly a type of story that was part of the Spider-Man experience, and the first two Spider-Man films have a place in my heart. I actually found a lot to like in the reboots. Not everything about them, but I thought they did a really good job of shading Spider-Man to do the things that they couldn't do initially with Tobey Maguire. What we have here is both of those halves put together in this Spider-Man, are the Marvel Spider-Man, and I don't think there was any doubt that they were going to stick the landing on this. This is something they've had cocked in the gun for a long time, and I'm so happy with how that played out.
Well, he's a lot more, you know, the Maguire Spider-Man was a lot more like the original, you know, sort of gloomier teenager character of Spider-Man when he first came out in the 60s. This new guy is a lot more like the Ultimate Universe Spider-Man.
Yes.
A lot more hip. He says the same kind of things Tom Holland said. He makes the same kind of pop culture references. I mean, they certainly have done a fantastic... Yeah, did you see that old movie?
That really old movie.
How old is this guy? I don't know. I didn't carbon date him.
Oh, my God.
He's on the younger side, all right?
But no, I it's brilliant. I like probably everybody else that walked out of that theater was thinking, I cannot wait to see this Spider-Man in a movie.
Homecoming.
And I hope, because I've been waiting for this villain from the very beginning, from the very first Spider-Man movie. I don't know why. I can't even give you a reason why, but I love the Vulture. The Vulture. So I was thinking, who could do it? And then they announced that Michael Keaton might actually be coming in to play the Vulture. Birdman, how appropriate. And then, no, it turns out he passed.
No, yeah.
He passed. Yeah. But I don't know. No, he didn't die. Oh, he passed on the front.
No, I knew that. I'd say there's a lot of old, bald actors out there that might be offended that they cast a non-old, bald actor.
Sam Raimi was looking at doing the Vulture. I think he was going to cast Malkovich, who I think would have been brilliant as the Vulture. But so, yeah, if he comes, the movie includes the Vulture.
Here's my dream Vulture. Robert Englund.
Rob, really?
Perfect. Yes. He's got the ball. Oh, yeah.
Picture his face. He's got the craggy nose, the weak chin. Shave his damn head. Put him in a suit.
Yeah.
Jesus. Robert Englund.
And he's used to physical roles. Freddy's pretty physical.
Yeah. He does look like Tombs. You're right.
There's a few of them out there. I can hear them right now going, yeah, but the Vulture, how come we're not getting Carnage? Or how come we're not getting quiet down, children. Okay.
Listen to the story.
Just, here's the deal. If you saw any scenes where the Falcon is flying in two different Captain America movies and you thought, "My God, that looks cool." Imagine what that would look like with a supervillain who's flying with his form between you and the sun so you can't see him until he's on top of you.
Yep.
Okay.
It is exactly those Falcon moments that made me think, oh my God, Vulture's going to be brilliant. Yeah,
Vulture's going to be awesome because it's a whole different way of thinking. And and they've made him creepier over the years doing guest turns in other books. And so it's a real question of just...
In fact, I think in the Ultimate Universe, he's a cannibal.
Oh my! Really?
Yeah, he's a cannibal, and they went really dark. I don't think they'll go that dark for the movie. But in Ultimate, he's a cannibal.
That was probably because there was a Daredevil comic where Daredevil is once again crying because of all the people that have died in his life, and he stumbles across by accident Vulture, in the graveyard, taking the jewelry off of a body that's about to be buried. And he says, I can't believe you're robbing a corpse. That's low even for you. And he says, I'm a scavenger. That's what I do, you know. And so it was like, oh, that's a really cool take on that, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm real happy with classic Silver Age villain like the Vulture up against what I think is going to be the and I say ultimate in jest, but it really will be the ultimate Spider-Man, you know, frankly.
Very much so. And Tom Holland, again, sticks the landing, absolutely. And his voice is perfect. His physicality is perfect. But he sounds like a kid. And
yeah.
And what was the comment that Falcon? I think it was Falcon that made him say, hey, kid, I don't know how many fights you've been in, but there's not usually this much talking.
Right.
Yeah.
That's Spider-Man. He's going to just jaw. Hey, wow, that's pretty cool. What's the tensile strength of that? You have a metal arm? That's awesome. I mean, he's amazingly starstruck as he's, you know, flying around and doing all the things he's doing.
And I got to tell you, I loved that moment between Cap and Spidey.
Yeah.
You know?
And just that Cap-Spidey fight. Ultimately, yes, we know Cap's going to come up on top of that. I think that everyone realized that from the beginning. Even Tony Stark, with all his amazing technology and armor and power and strength, even the computer, his new computer AI, Friday, says, we can't beat him in a fight.
Right.
We cannot beat him in a fight. And then even Tony Stark goes, well, study his motions and let's go kick his ass. It worked for a little bit, but, you know, Cap's going to come out on top. His fighting style, his skill, absolutely unparalleled. So you could be a 30-tonner. A 10-tonner, which is what Spider-Man is, technically, according to the handbook of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
He can bench press 10 tons, and Cap's still going to be there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That whole point of that sort of recognition, you know, you've got heart, kid. You know, where are you from? Are you Queens? Mm-hmm. Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
good, man. So
and the end, too. I mean, by the way, folks, there are two never mind. If you're listening to this, you've seen the movie. If you missed it, there's one at the very end, a scene after all the credits. So if you haven't seen it, go back and watch it again, where Spider-Man is in it again. But his comment to his aunt about how he got beat up. Oh, some guy from Brooklyn. And a big kid, a big guy with a real big guy.
He's like, huge, huge.
that's another one of those times where they're not afraid to give you just a piece of character moment, you know?
Yeah.
And that introduction, that recognition, you know, I can't believe I'm fighting Captain America. Well, you're not, kid. I'm going to go fight somebody else.
Right.
That's a Marvel moment, you know. I think of that as a Marvel moment. A lot of people think of the Marvel Universe as this cliche where the two heroes meet, fight, realize they're on the same team, and then go team up to beat the bad guy. And that was certainly a 60s Silver Age Marvel cliche. But it was more of these guys crossing over and interacting was really the thing that made the Marvel Universe so special as a shared world. And Spider-Man really is kind of – he's the glue, frankly, in that Marvel Universe because – Spider-Man can swing with the Avengers. He can swing with Daredevil. He can go. The Marvel team up book was created so that Spider-Man could literally have an adventure with every single character in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah,
and I think he did.
The Fantastic Four. He was always popping up there
and
giving Johnny Storm a hard time.
Yeah.
How brilliant for the movie universe to explain that, you know, where did Spider-Man get his web shooters and that great-looking costume? Tony Stark!
Yeah.
Tony Stark built it for him.
And the webbing he developed.
No, I know, but the fact that he holds up that onesie, he's like, you know, look at this, you can see through these?
The other thing, too, about his goggles that he was wearing, there was an interesting take on the character that I've never heard before. My senses are turned up so high, it helps me to focus when I wear these. I mean, he doesn't have to. But he wears them to help him focus, and so obviously when Stark gives him a full makeover head to toe, his eyes are moving, and it's obviously because they're technology lenses that are focusing and opening and closing. Oh my God, it's brilliant! Now he has emotion; his eyes can move, and
it is such a beautiful explanation.
Yeah.
Tony Stark built him his stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, of course.
It's a very elegant fix. You know, we accept that Spider-Man is a genius, and we also accept that as a kid he's smart enough to MacGyver up a web shooter in this formula. You know, and that's cool. You know, I mean, you play him as a genius kid, and he talks rapidly, and you know, I don't think Tom Holland played him as necessarily an ADHD kid, but he certainly you could maybe make an argument for a little bit of that if you wanted to, but right. I think the notion that all this stuff got focused and Stark used the Fabricator to, you know, give him that full body makeover was a wonderful way to get him into the Marvel Universe. And it doesn't, you notice Uncle Ben's out of the picture. Spider-Man's right. been operating for 6 months. Everything happened, you know, we know his origin, which is...
I love that, too. He just looks at his hand. When Tony says, what happened, you know, he kind of, he pries, and all Peter does is look down at his hand, and he was like, he didn't really say anything. It's like a long story or something, but he looked at his hand.
Yeah, well, he said when people in the village like this don't do anything, you know, horrible things happen.
Yeah.
And that's all we needed. That's all we needed to know. Yeah. We're like, oh, my God, he just told us about Uncle Ben without telling us about Uncle Ben.
But even more importantly, he didn't say, oh, it's been by radioactive spider all day at the lab. You know, we didn't have to know. Everyone knows that. Yeah. Everyone knows that, you know?
It's a great way to use five previous movies to not have to put that into the film.
Oh,
thank you.
If only we can skip another Bruce Wayne parent murder scene. That would make me so happy.
I'm totally the more I think about the film, I really see this as the end of the Avengers storyline. This is the beginning of Phase 3, but it really is this 13 film sequence is going to get called the Avengers cycle or the Avengers mythos or whatever it's going to end up being called, because it's the creation and the destruction of the Avengers in one fell swoop. Yeah. You'll notice there's literally a stop change that's 6 months from now. We're going to get Doctor Strange and we're going to go Mystic Arts. The very next Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, we're back in the cosmic. And so when the Avengers show back up, down the road at the end of Phase 3 and we get the beginning of the Infinity War, it may look like a completely different Avengers team.
Yeah.
You know, there's no telling how much of this...
I'd forgotten, by the way, talking of Doctor Strange, we watched Winter Soldier before we went to go see Civil War, and they make mention that they're talking about, like, you know, they're talking about the algorithm and, like, who is it targeting? Who would it target? And the one S.H.I.E.L.D. guy is saying... anybody that could be considered a threat, you know, Avengers compound, Stephen Strange. He specifically says Stephen Strange, and I'm like, oh, wow, I had forgotten that. They actually mention Stephen Strange in Winter Soldier. These great little nuggets.
They've been dropping that guy's name ever since 2001. And again, this should come as no surprise to you, huge Doctor Strange fan. I'm a Steve Ditko fan anyways. And so
I love Doctor Strange.
And so, you know, I have been patiently waiting for Doctor Strange movie, but I've also been kind of dreading it. But now I'm not. I don't dread it anymore because I honestly don't think at this point Marvel can make a bad movie given the way that they've handled everything so far.
Do we know who Mads is playing in that film? We know he's a villain, but do we know who he is?
I have a suspicion.
I'd like to see him as Nightmare.
I actually think he is a vessel for Dormammu. I don't think he's actually Dormammu. I think he's a student who allows himself to become, because he's got the eyes that are all burned out, like he's housing some. And I just can't imagine. Dormammu plays such a central role to that mythos that you cannot have Baron Mordo and Stephen Strange and all these other characters and not have Dormammu.
I've always been a Mephisto Nightmare fan myself.
There's going to be more than one Doctor Strange movie, so they're going to pull in all the villains.
While we're talking about this, I want to transition
back over.
The Doctor Strange film has taken it on the chin recently because of Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. She's Celtic in the film, but he's a Tibetan master in the comics. And of course, as soon as the trailer dropped, everybody went, another instance of not casting Asian actors for these roles. Contrast this with what happened in Civil War, where everybody is routinely and championing and cheering the inclusion of Black Panther story as being pitch perfect, and saying, you know, in more than one instance, this is how you do it with yep. agency and sympathy. And,
they did not have to whitewash a single thing about T'Challa and his origin and his country.
Right.
Not at all. Not at all. And I understand that the explanation from the screenwriter, Cargill, who I know, he's a great guy, very smart, and you know, he said Marvel looked at their decisions and they said, look, no matter what we choose, we're going to get shit for it. Doesn't matter what we choose. But I disagree. I don't think they made the best choice, I guess is what I'm saying. Bravo that they made her a woman. That's great. I want to give, you know, I want to give credit where credit is due. But if you look at the percentage of female characters in movies from 2015, it's right at around 34% mm-hmm. of roles went to women. Which is certainly, when women are half the population, that's not acceptable. The percentage of roles that went to Asians, whether male or female, in 2015 is something like 6%.
Yeah.
And so my take on it is, since it's not Tibet, you know, Cargill mentioned that they can't make it Tibet because that's such a hot button issue with China and they don't want to lock out that market. Fine. I agree with that. That's a good, sound business decision. But so it's not Tibet. Guess what? It's not Tibet. It's Kunlun. It's Shangri-La. It's Xanadu. It's some other mystical monastery in the mountains.
But you still have an Asian or Asian origin actor that you're saying should be playing
exactly.
that role.
Unless
Kevin Feige from Marvel has gone on record as saying that they basically did that because they didn't want to be stereotypical. And to counter this, and personally, I don't think it's a big deal. It doesn't bother me one iota. The character of Wong in the Doctor Strange movie is played by an amazing Asian actor named Benedict Wong, and they modernized his role, and they made him something that's going to kick our ass. So they did cast an Asian as Wong.
No, they did. No, there's no doubt about that.
So but as opposed to making this ancient, you know, wise Asian guy, which could have some negative stereotypes thrown there, oh, you know, they're doing that whole Hop Sing thing, or Fu Manchu look, or whatever, I think that, and making it a woman brilliant, because, you know, we're talking about knowledge and mystic and power, why not, you know? I don't know. I personally, I just think it's an unfettered nerd rage. I don't necessarily think it's necessary, and it doesn't bother or change anything.
I mean, it certainly doesn't enrage me. I just see it as a lost opportunity.
Right.
It is one more character that did not have to be, of all, just look at it this way, of all the different ethnicities, races that they could have picked for the Ancient One, they picked a white British woman.
And I hear what both of you are saying, and I'm prepared to give them a mulligan on this, because you both know that these movies take years to develop.
Yeah.
And I think when this started up, you know, of course, Chris has said that he didn't intentionally specify Asian one, but I think when it got to the casting portion of this, I think they were looking at this as, well, if we make her a woman right now, this is a big issue that there's not enough women in action sequences, women in Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a role that's not strictly going to be too much of a it won't be a problem if we make this character a woman. There's nothing that says we can't make the Ancient One a woman. Let's make her a woman. Let's put amazing actress in there.
Right.
And I think they thought they were doing a good thing.
And I don't necessarily think Marvel's guilty of whitewashing anything. They made Heimdall a black man.
Right.
You know?
No, right, right.
I mean, we're talking the amazing Idris Elba, who does an amazing job in the role. He wasn't a black man in the comic book. Big
right.
deal.
But that's, I guess my point is, because they had done such a great job, because they are doing such a great job, I think on this one, there was they overthought it. They overthought it.
You may be well right that they overthought it. And granted, I think all of this is coming up in a very short span of time, and it's coming up as a reaction, and you know, not as an anticipation. In other words, that old adage about it takes a mile to turn a battleship. You know, I don't think Hollywood is set up to move quickly on anything for any reason, and especially not Disney-backed Marvel. So I think going forward, we're not going to have as many problems. They've already talked about, they're already moving the schedule. They're already, you know, making room for a Black Widow movie. these things, I think, are going to correct, but yeah. I feel that there certainly was no malice aforethought, and there are people out there who are reacting as if there was malice aforethought.
Right.
And that's certainly not my thought. My thought is that they thought they were going with the safe pick. And what I'm saying is that, especially with a studio like Marvel that is producing such excellent material that everybody is loving and embracing, that they're in a position to not have to make the safe pick.
Yeah. No, they definitely have the power to do that. I feel like sometimes this.
I mean, Baron Mordo is a black character. That's great.
Right.
That's fantastic.
Right. And a great actor, too.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Once again, Wong is Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Wong is absolutely Asian. Yeah. So, but the only reason I bring it up is because Black Panther, and people have been talking about this, Black Panther showed that you can take what could have been perceived and likely probably was a stereotypical black character from the 70s, and you can update it to modern day to make it seem absolutely not stereotypical. Yeah. Nobody's going to have a problem with the Black Panther movie being set in Wakanda, a black country with this great resource that has advanced technology. Mm-hmm. They are doing the right thing by doing that. And I think, and it's it's such a minor thing for the Ancient One that they made him not Asian or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm going to go see Doctor Strange. I love Doctor Strange.
I'm not, it's not a game changer for me.
One of those things that I just, God damn it. I wish that they had chosen differently.
When they cast Tilda Swinton as Dr. Lowe in the remake, I'm going to freak out and be angry. So I'm going to be like, no, not Dr. Lowe.
Yeah, but honestly, I think the difference, and I say this because I think DC is actually listening now, but the difference between DC and Marvel is that I think Marvel does listen to what the fans are saying, does listen to the criticism when there is, and they take that to heart. And so, do I think they would make a step like that again in the future? No, I actually don't think they would. I think they would think much more carefully about casting of a character that is of a certain ethnicity or racial background. And that's great. That's fantastic.
If the watchdogs out there are listening, be more acutely interested in how Iron Fist is going to portray martial arts culture. Sure, I get that, that's fine, in terms of casting decisions, there's a lot to forgive here, starting with Sam Jackson as Nick Fury. Granted, that was a step that was taken in the comics, but it was a great step.
It was a step taken by Marvel,
and so those things. I think a soft word and a gentle admonishment works better than vitriol and hate
and spitting fire. I would agree. And by the way, like a friend of mine joked, I said, now, if I go see the Doctor Strange movie and the Tibetan monastery, the ancient monastery looks like the colors of Benetton or looks like a yoga retreat in Santa Fe, I'm going to be really disappointed.
Yeah.
Because if Tilda Swinton is walking around and there are a bunch of Asian-looking Shaolin Buddhist monks. Great, that's what I expect to see at a Shaolin monastery. So there is such a thing as making it too inclusive, right? Of like people are saying, well, there should be people of all colors and all nationalities and all. Actually, no. I don't need to see that. I don't think it needs to be colors of Benetton Monastery. I think it could look like one would imagine an Asian monastery even with Tilda Swinton as the ancient one.
There's being sensitive to current cultural trends, and then there's tanking your story because you're trying to please everybody.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's hard.
We talked about Iron Fist. Iron Fist should not be cast as an Asian character because he's
not in the comics.
Exactly.
Like
and he straddles the world of white culture and Asian culture, and he doesn't fit into either one. And that's part of his arc. That's part of what he is all about.
I don't think it was ever a danger of them casting an Asian as Iron Fist. He's not Asian.
Well, but people complained. People were like, oh, gosh, you're missing this opportunity. You should cast
people
an
who
Asian.
Don't know the story
know,
or the character.
My point is that unlike...
That's the crux of the character.
Right, unlike certain, people would accuse social justice warriors of doing this. Unlike that, they're just saying, just do it just to do it.
Yeah.
I'm more of like, well... Does it benefit the story? one, is it true to the story, two, and then is it something that helps us to become more of an accepting, inclusive culture in 21st century the world?
Right.
I mean, great. If it does all those, then let's go for it.
Yeah.
But if you're making a character a different race just to make him a different race,
that's not a good reason.
Right.
That's right. Gentlemen, I'm afraid the clock on the Lobot Lounge wall is saying that we have to wrap this up. I do want to make a note for those of you who are listening. We do have a missing gentleman. Mr. Mickey Finn has not joined us. We had some technical difficulties, unfortunately. He's with us in spirit, and I drank all his drinks.
Right.
So yeah. I thank you, Mickey, for not showing up. But nevertheless, we miss you, and we'll have him join us at another time.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Gentleman Nerds podcast, broadcasting from the Lobot Lounge, and we'll give our traditional goodbyes. Mark Finn.
Once again, Matt Fraction's Hawkeye comic book series, several graphic novels. They're easy to find at your local comic shop. I recommend them unreservedly.
That's right, and if you disagree, you can talk to Mark Finney. He'll get you a no prize.
That's right.
Aaron Dioive.
Loved Civil War. If you guys have not seen it, you absolutely must. Yes, Civil War, but watch Winter Soldier first. It really helps to see Winter Soldier before you go see Civil War.
It's Aaron. He's a card-carrying member of FOOM, Friends of Old Marvel. And this is Joseph Otino saying, until Iron Man uses WD-40, make mine Marvel. Oh, and Red Skull lives.
You belong, you belong, you belong, you belong to the Merry Marvel Marching Society.
Ooh. Oh, God.
I'm sorry that I know that.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by Pepper Potts for President Super PAC.
I'm sorry that Mickey couldn't join us.
Me too.
You were talking about
it. He's like, I'm rebooting, not working. I'm rebooting, not working. So
I love you, man.
I know. We would gladly. I would gladly let Joseph take a bullet for him.
Not in the chest, though. No.
Not in the chest.
Like one of the fleshy parts.
Exactly. Like the meaty part of Joseph's thigh.
Yeah, or in the shoulder.
I would gladly let Joseph take a bullet for Mickey.
Mickey, I hope you're hearing this. I am going to take a bullet for you now.
Lovely.